Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Welcome to the post-election Kudzu Vine. This is our first Kudzu Vine after an even year election where there are tons of races, and we're going to be here to wrap it up fully. Right now on the line with us is Tim Shiflett. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, and then Catherine's going to be joining us in a bit. She's in transit, but we're going to be good. And we're not going to have a lot of guests tonight, but we do want your calls. So if anybody's listening, wants to call on in, 646-478-4503. Give your 2 cents worth, maybe 4 cents, depends on what you got. Call on in. We're not having a lot of guests this week because there's so much to cover throughout the South. And, you know, we've predicted a long time, and it certainly came to fruition. Jim Martin. Did push a runoff, and so did Jim Powell. So we're not finished with elections in Georgia. Basically, we had 3 statewide races that were partisan, and only one of them got finished.
Hey, and David, should we go ahead and thank our Secretary of State for helping Jim Powell out to get his name out there?
there's a loser. If we go over winners and losers, man, that's been a loser. This campaign season. I was reading an article this morning. She was talking about how Fulton County didn't do this and Fulton County didn't do that. And I thought, you know, sometimes these things that counties have problems and they're not taken care of, it takes 2 or 3 years to come to fruition. And let me see, who was in charge of Fulton County, say, 2 or 3 years ago, Tim?
Oops.
That'd be Terry Handel.
Yes, sir.
Head of elections, screwing that up. Head of Fulton County. I don't live in Fulton County, never have. But it's her county that had all the problems. And it's where she still lives, I guess. And so
the problem I got with her is this is the most partisan Secretary of State that we've ever had in a position that's not supposed to be that way.
Yes, and it seems like she would know better. I mean, after you look and see what. How Karen Handel, full thought of her. I mean, not Karen Handel. Well, see, it's becoming one and the same. Catherine Harris. I mean, my goodness. Hey, why do you keep, doing these things? Don't you see if you want to have a career, an upside, you don't keep doing these same kind of things? And she had learned. But and there'll be so much time to talk with her, and I think her upside, she may have to stay in her little spot, and then we may try to go after her next time and heavily. If I had to have one Republican elected official to lose, man, she's top of the list right now.
Absolutely.
Yes, but then I guess let's kind of take it to a national perspective right now. Senator Obama, I mean, he won electoral votes by 100 votes. 100 votes, and then on the popular vote, 53% was the last number I saw, the most any Democrat had gotten since Lyndon Johnson in 64. Just an incredible victory.
And it was scattered all over the country, too. He made inroads everywhere. I mean, he almost picked off states like Montana. He came within 8 points in both North and South Dakota. We know about the southern states that he won and almost won. He is right now within about 2,000 votes of having a lead of 8 million votes. This was just a good old thrashing any way you put it, wasn't it, David?
Yes, and I don't think he's actually got 101 electoral votes. Missouri has still yet to be decided. Let me flash over that. It appears that about 6,000 votes separate them. I don't know. I mean, and you know, if John McCain wins that and it goes under 100 electoral votes, I mean, that still doesn't change the magnitude of this victory. I mean, we're talking about if Barack Obama is Joe Jones and he's just another white guy, I mean, this is still a stunning victory. But then you add to the fact that he is Barack Obama of mixed heritage. You know, the rest of his family would be called black under anybody's, you know, judgment. I mean, this is a stunning, stunning victory.
Stunning.
And a good stunning for me.
And we're talking about Barack Obama, who actually is going to get one electoral vote out of the state of Nebraska. We're talking about Barack Obama, who, because of the fact that he got about two-thirds of the Hispanic vote in this country, it enabled him to carry the states of New Mexico and Colorado and Nevada, all three. He almost swept the region that John McCain was from. John McCain beat Obama by less than 10 points in his home state. You know what, David? Landslides don't stop at state lines.
No. I tell you, at one point, now, certainly John McCain did pull ahead and win by about 29% of the vote there, but at one point, he was leading in Utah. I mean, at what, you know, where do you start counting to have a Democrat leading Utah for the president? I mean, and, you know, this is the, you know, basically, if you pick the state that really made his total run, you know, you start counting to me at Iowa. That's a state without a lot of diversity,
right?
But then that's a state that really took to him. And I tell you one thing, I said this the other night, it made Kevin Ross, my co-host on the exit poll, a little upset, but to my opinion, John McCain finished third, Barack Obama finished first, Hillary Clinton finished second, and John McCain finished third. I don't know what you think about that, Tim, but I basically think whoever won the Democratic nomination was going to win the presidency. So that's where I get that from.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But, you know, just looking around these states, I mean, let's look at California. He beat him by 2.5 million votes in that state alone. I'm sitting here looking at the state of North Carolina colored blue by an African-American liberal from Chicago.
Yeah, I guess
it's amazing.
The Jesse Helms machine didn't come out in force on that one.
Yeah, and it took Liddy Dole down with it, which I'm sure we'll get to shortly. But
let's be honest. Liddy Dole took Liddy Dole down.
Help herself.
No. She did herself in on that one. But I will say this. I do think that Barack Obama's coattails probably helped the governor's candidate, Bev Perdue, governor-elect, in a big way there. I do think that was a race that looked much tighter and kind of totally changed out towards the end, and that was more your effect there, I think.
If you're looking at this national map and you're trying to compare this result to another national election, does the year 1980 kind of come to mind for you?
Yeah, I was a little young then, although there it was a closer race, but you did have a sitting president. I mean, just looking at history, 60, I guess, comes in more, you know, seems like it's more appropriate, although, once again, that was a close election.
But the reason I mentioned 1980, David, is we actually saw a generational change in the electorate in 1980 when Ronald Reagan brought in with him a new young generation of Republican voters that were going to vote for the Republicans for the next 30 years. I am wondering if Barack Obama has not done the same thing in 2008.
That's what I think.
We can hope. And welcome, Catherine.
Hi, sir. I'm late.
No, that's okay. And we've been talking about all kind of things. Don't kind of change gears. Stay in Georgia. We've been talking some national stuff. But one race that surprised me a lot was the appeals court race. And the reason I guess I bring it up is because we had Michael Meyer von Bremen, probably the most influential candidate in the entire race of a 1, 2, 3, 7 candidate field, and he finished last.
Yep.
Catherine, thoughts on that quickly?
I haven't looked at those numbers very much. I don't know if it was, like, if you looked at the numbers around the state, did he get a lot of votes in certain areas? Did he not?
I don't really. I mean, you can look at the county results. I don't think people knew he was a Democrat. Just like, for instance, the Republicans' favorite candidate was Perry McGuire, who finished sixth. with 8% of the vote. Michael Weyermann Bremen, he finished seventh with 7.1. So these two candidates that were the most, I guess, identified with parties didn't do well at all. Sarah Doyle and Mike Sheffield finished first and second. Sarah Doyle with 22.5 and Mike Sheffield with 20.9. By the way, there was a Tamala Adkins that finished third. The female candidates actually did quite well.
Well, you know, that used to be my strategy. If I didn't know, I voted for the women. I don't do it anymore, but I used to do it.
Yeah, well, I was saying my wife and I had, she didn't ask me anything about that race, and she said, I said, well, what, oh, by the way, it was like I had forgotten to say, hey, this guy Michael Marvin Brim was on my show. I was really impressed. The story about how his father was against Nazis, all this stuff, and she was like, oh yeah, and she'd already voted, and she said something about like, oh yeah, I voted for Sarah Doyle. I just figured she was a lady, and so there must have been a lot of that going on, and I don't know. I'd like to find out more about those two candidates in future weeks. So that would be kind of a problem.
I wonder if they work the state, like if they work the whole state.
I have no idea. I mean, I can't say I saw a sign for them. I heard about them coming to an event. It was just very interesting what happened there. But and also, I see some people are starting to join the chat room. If people want to come on in and talk with us, of course, you can certainly chat there, but go ahead and give us a call, 646-478-4503. Staying in Georgia before we move into other states around the South, one place, and it was a good night, I mean, no doubt about it, particularly at the statewide level, but one place we really didn't make a lot of progress was in the congressional elections. Tim, what did you see was our best gain beyond places where we actually controlled things like John Barrow, but in those seven seats we don't control, what was our best gain?
Well, you know, I was actually going to mention the fact at how well Congressman Barra and Congressman Marshall both did. You know, we were talking about these congressional races in Georgia a year ago, and we all agreed that the National Republicans were looking at both of those seats as prime pickup opportunities. And what happened? One of them got, what, 57% of the vote? The other one got 66. No problems there.
Yeah. I never thought they were going to be in much danger because I had actually seen how in places that people knew them, they had always gone up. And so...
Did you think they'd win by those margins, though?
John Barrows was incredibly impressive. Jim Marshall's was incredibly healthy as well. But then that shows, I guess, the effect. Places where they packed in Democrats did much better. Some of these other seats, I mean, there was just not as much action. I do want to say I think Doug Heckman did make some gains on what Alan Burns did. But some other places we made gains, but it was like, you know, 3 and 5 points. And I just thought we were going to do a little better than that, for what it's worth. Catherine, I know you don't live in one of those districts. Were you a little bit surprised at
how
growth seemed a little anemic?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised by, you know, how poorly, like, Bill Gillespie's race went, and I was surprised. I mean, I didn't really think they were going to win, but I thought they'd do a little bit better.
I was kind of thinking a lot of these guys would get in the 40s.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
It didn't happen, and I don't think it's their fault at all. I think I think it was just that there's something about the way that the presidential race particularly turned voters out. It then seemed to lock in where it didn't help them down the ballot. But it will be interesting to see what happens in future years if the maps get changed up a little bit. I'm trying to see.
And they will.
Yes, and that's and how many districts we get, because we just have one more election with these particular seats. Now Bill Jones, I do believe he made a little bit of a gain. I guess he got about 32% in the 6th district, which is a, you know, very Republican area.
Yeah.
Doug Heckman did get 38, which was definitely some gains there, which they said, I think they were mentioned in today's paper, Gwinnett County. Well, the Democratic percentage in Gwinnett County was like 20% increase. You know, very, very robust, which you can tell Gwinnett County's changing a great deal. I don't know what that's going to mean, you know, around for other places. I did see that some of those counties north of Gwinnett seem to get more Republican, so that may be some kind of residual effect from that. But
there's a map, David, that was in the Atlanta paper today, and it showed how all the counties in Georgia trended. The most Republican area of Georgia is from on the southern border, say, Floyd County, in a straight line across and up to the Tennessee and North Carolina line. That is now the most Republican area of the state.
Yes. Which I guess... go ahead, Tim.
I was going to also say the donut is expanding. I'm sure Catherine could address that better than me. What I mean by that is the metro area, suburbia around Atlanta, is turning blue, doing it very fast.
Yay.
Yeah. And actually, the other night, they talked about, for the years from about 80 to 92 or somewhere in there, they talked about the donut, or maybe 94. I actually told folks that I was on one of the radio stations I was on Tuesday. I said, I don't think the donut exists anymore. Because, the donut used to would be Gwinnett, North Fulton, Cobb, Clayton, South Fulton, DeKalb, DeKalb might even be the donut, but around there. But then you've got counties like Rockdale and Clayton that are now, Clayton heavily Democratic, the most Democratic in the state, Rockdale not Democratic. But then you still have other counties like Gwinnett, which is still Republican. I mean, it's changing. It's just, it's not the same thing it was before. And then, of course, if you start including a county like Forsyth in the donut, that's one of the most Republican counties. And strange thing there, I don't know if y'all noticed this, but they're actually 50-plus percent of that county voted early, and yet that county was one of the slowest to come in all night.
What county are you talking about?
Forsyth.
Oh.
I mean, it was like they'd already all voted. How come you can't count it? But I will say this. It was real weird how Republicans started out with big leads and then they dwindled all night long, where some other places in other states you saw Democrats with leads that dwindled or stayed the same or something like that. It was just, and I think that did kind of mentally set in that, Republicans, I guess other observers saw that Saxby Campbell's had a lead and he just kind of lost it throughout the night. Whereas if different votes would have come in early, I think, and then he would have been maybe losing at the start or under 50 at the start, I think that would have set in a different mindset in people's minds. But I guess looking at around the other southern states, we were mentioning North Carolina had a great night for Democrats.
Yeah.
Even a state like Alabama, in which I saw one exit poll that showed 1 in 10 white voters voted for Barack Obama, and I'm sure the Senate race was very similar to that. But still, given that kind of landscape, Bobby Bright was able to win the congressional seat, and we held Bud Kramer's seat, Parker Griffin. So we actually made gains in places like Alabama. What in South Carolina, that race stayed pretty close, and I want to say that congressional race was just nip and tuck over there, where the one that Andy Brack told us about many, many months ago, between Linda Kettner, the food line executive, and Henry Brown. Does anybody know the exact result there yet? Because I know it was one of the closer races.
I can get it for you.
Yeah, we'll probably get it. Yeah, let's see. If I go to South Carolina, I guess it will bring up all the different. It's almost like you get too much information.
I know.
They're giving you exit polls. They're giving you all this different stuff.
Between Brown and Kettner, is that the one you wanted?
Yes.
52-48, Brown.
And he did hold on to that.
Yeah.
That was very close. And that was a lesbian candidate, an openly lesbian candidate in the South, and she did that well. And then even another district, Wilson and Miller over there, was just an 8-point race. Their closest race was one that was still just a 30-point margin. The Democrat got 35%, so those races were all closer than most of the Georgia races, for instance. So that was another state. One state that actually in the South that didn't do near as well for Democrats was Louisiana. Now, Mary Landrieu actually won with a little more of a margin. But then we did lose Don Casey, which did surprise me. And then I believe John McCain actually made gains on George Bush from election to election. And some of those other races were going to be close, weren't.
Yeah, and you still got two races, congressional races, to be decided over there too, David. Don't forget that.
Yes, we have the the second district, which that's the heavily Democratic district, and then the other seat, more on the north side, the Caddo, the Attorney General, Carmouche. That's who.
Carmouche, yeah.
That's going to be one that's going to be a big, you know, contested race, but I don't think the New Orleans seat's contested at all. Phil Jefferson, he's gotten to the point where he'll win again, and it's sad. Just like, you know, the other night on the exit poll, I criticized Ted Stevens, and it's pitiful that Ted Stevens wins, or at least is leading, or has so much trouble getting defeated. It's the same on our side if somebody like a Bill Jefferson does that well.
Consider this, though. After the 2002 election, the Democrats were down to 203 House members. After the smoke clears and if things play out the way I think they're going to play out, we're going to be back up to 257, which is just about where we were before the 94 election. Think about that.
Yeah, but there is one big difference for us, Tim. Back in that, you know, before that 94 election, you and I lived, and Buddy Darden was our representative.
Yeah.
When you let
don't remind me. Don't remind me.
So, but that was Louisiana was one state where it was, a little disappointing. That was a 19-point margin. And maybe that is something where you actually see the Katrina effect finally materialized. It just seemed like it materialized, and it finally did.
Then why did Landrieu have her easiest win this year? That don't make sense.
I think people have gotten to where they really like her. I think there you got a lot of swing voters, you got a lot of Republicans that have decided that she does good work. They also probably like her brother. He was one of the heroes kind of coming out of Hurricane Katrina, but just continuing to move around the South. In Texas, they just had an 11-point margin for president, which, I mean, it's an 11-point margin. It's not like Barack Obama was ready to, you know, poised to take the state, but still, you know, that was, I mean, for the past, say, 10 years, probably since maybe about 94, the last 14 years, I mean, you'd probably say Texas is probably the most Republican state in the nation. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, no elected statewide officials still. But you can almost tell they're ready to start building back. But Texas started making gains. I believe in the Senate race, even though the fellow Rick Noriega didn't win or even come, you know, a hair's close, it was still better than it was before. It was, roughly the same margin as the presidency. I think Cornyn got the same as McCain. I'm sure they shared almost every voter having that same margin.
But, you know, watching the returns on Tuesday night, Texas was, you know, it was tight up until the end of the night.
Yes.
So, I mean.
Yeah.
We did lose Lapson there.
Yeah. If you come to state, you know, mention about it, whatever it is about it. In that race, I really didn't have a good feel, but the fact that that was just a delay. You know, a factor of delay. You know, they knew they need to put him out.
Right.
And then those folks were going to go back to where they were before. But still, it was good to see that Texas is starting to, moderate or whatever you want to say. Maybe there's a bit of embarrassment after the past 8 years and some of the voters are trying to change around. Arkansas, now that was a state where Mark Pryor, the Democratic senator, didn't even have opposition, but yet on the presidential level, John McCain did quite well. That's a state, though, you have to say, if there was a very few states, I would say that would have been a lot different between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. That's probably one of the few states where she would have actually, you know, done better slash won it, as opposed. Looking at Mississippi, obviously the presidential race was closer than it's been, but the two Senate seats, obviously the Cochran seat was in no danger. And then the Musgrove slash Wicker seat, that race ended up being a 10-point race. So it did not, even though it looked like it was going to be very similar to, say, the race here in Georgia, the Minnesota race, a tight one. In the end, it just wasn't.
There is one interesting thing I want to mention about Mississippi, and that is how well Childers ran in his reelection. He won easily by 10 points. I believe Mississippi won is ours for a while, don't you?
Yes, and I think that's a testament to Travis Childers and his campaign.
Yeah.
He seems like he is just an incredibly likable guy, and then he's just got a good team. And I will say this, looking at the map, you know, there's some Democratic counties throughout that state. It's not like they're all, you know, bundled there together. And so if you look, I believe his district's at the very top of the state. I mean, there's several. There's like four counties in his district, I'm just guessing, that would have gone for Obama. And so that helps having that kind of base. And then if he's able to pull voters over, that happens, which it looked like that Musgrove and Obama's results were very similar in that state. One of the few states that actually got more Republican that I actually saw on a map, Tennessee, and which I thought was kind of strange in that, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, they came so close to Tennessee came so close to electing Harold Ford Jr. So it's hard to say, you know, Tennessee has a big race problem. I mean, a state that would do that, why in the world would they, you know, just out of hand dismiss Barack Obama? So it's something different or more nuanced than that. But if you look at the map, you know, for instance, I'm looking, actually, I pulled up the Senate map. I thought I pulled up the presidential map. Lamar Alexander only lost one county, and that was Haywood, which is near Memphis. But,
I only see Obama carrying five counties, and three of those, of course, are over toward the Memphis area, and then Nashville City, and then one more county, a couple
Jackson.
Of counties over, and
Jackson.
That's it.
Jackson. Yeah, he carried Shelby, which does not surprise. Haywood, don't know anything about Haywood. Hardeman, Davidson County, which is not surprising. And then Jackson, which is kind of in between Nashville and Knoxville. So, yeah, and do y'all find that surprising that a state that would come so close to electing Harold Ford Jr. Would then Barack Obama would lose ground from John Kerry? Catherine, any thoughts?
I'm just pleased at how well everything went for the Democrats. I'm kind of hesitant to put too fine a examination on everything and just hope that we're able to pull ahead and get our economy in order. But that's me. You know how I am.
But this is what the show's here for, you know, is to perform the autopsy.
I know.
We make the predictions, then we perform the autopsies. That's what we do.
I know.
And so,
well, what do we think about the Martin race?
Okay, well, we're going to get back to it. I was just, but we think that that's a great. I mean, we can just go ahead and get back into it. I think that that's all going to be a turnout. That's going to be vote builder versus whatever the GOP has. It's going to be early voting and voting absentee. Who can get their voters to the polls? You know, that's what it's going to be about. Catherine, what's your stance? When you're down there, you were at the parties where things were happening.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's all about turnout. I think we do have a good shot at it. I hope that we get some visitors from around the country, particularly Chicago and D.C., to check in and New York and help us get out the vote. I'm not sure. I think that the fact that Saxby got 49.9% of the vote is you know, sort of bellwether that, you know, his opportunity, his chance to win are diminished. So I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be some hard work in the next 21 days or how many over days there are. But I'm optimistic. And, he did really well, really, seriously. Even though he didn't win outright, he did very well, much better than I think some people expected.
You mean Jim Martin?
Jim Martin, yeah.
Oh, yes. I mean, I mean, this is a race that, I mean, you have to go back and put in perspective, and you have to look at when Jim Martin was at 29% head-to-head against Saxby Chambliss, and maybe Dale Cardwell was 32. I'm talking the polls back in, like, May.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a race that, I mean, no Democrat was, you know, doing well at all, and people were like, well, you know, why are five guys actually trying for this thing? It's not worth having. And I always thought all along that the vote was going to come very close to whatever Barack Obama did, and there's a chance that you're going to have some crossover voters. Like I said, you're more likely to have a Martin McCain voter than you were a Chambliss Obama voter.
Right.
And that's exactly what we saw. I was surprised that the Libertarian candidate Buckley didn't do better. I still am always wondering why the Libertarians, you know, these Republican-leaning folks, they get so mad at their party about the bailout and stuff, but they just don't go over and support those guys like you think they would. Because, if the Republicans aren't giving them what they want, the Libertarians are more likely to do that. If they'd support them, I guess they could feel like they're standing for something. And, of course, me being a Democrat, they can divide themselves in two, and we can take everything with certainly pluralities. Although they've changed the law here in Georgia, but that's certainly not the case in every state. Tim,
what did you think?
Well, here's something I was wondering about. Why did the Libertarian candidate on the Public Service Commission Northern District run so much better than Buckley did when Buckley was far better known? Does anybody have a clue what happened there?
I don't.
You know what I think happened, and if I'm pretty sure I just left that race blank, but I bet a lot of Democrats voted for the Libertarian. It was a case of not the Republican, and so they thought that I bet.
No. I'm talking about the Northern District.
You mean Bubba McDonald?
Yeah, the Libertarian candidate got 5% of the vote in that race. And Buckley only got 3% of the vote in his
race.
Well,
there you have it. I don't know if you saw Peach Pundit this morning, or maybe it was yesterday. I just saw it this morning, where Eric Erickson actually said, "Go Jim Powell," and basically his contention was, "Bubba McDonald's not worth supporting because he's really he's been a Democrat and now he's just a chameleon that'll change parties to fit his own needs." And so you probably have a lot of Republicans that are kind of really know what's going on, and they just have no respect for Bubba McDonald. And you may see more of that. That's why it's just so crazy that Karen Handel, you know, used so much political capital to help Bubba McDonald. Because, you know, why do you care so much about Bubba McDonald when all he is self-serving and he wants to get on there to he seems to be a tool of the utility companies anyway.
Well, I don't think that's what was going on with Karen Handel. I think she just wouldn't let go. She just didn't want to lose that. Whether, you know, I don't know that it was in support of Bubba McDonald or if it was just that she felt like she was right and she wasn't going to give it up.
Yes, which we've already talked about her and the way
she gave Powell more free publicity than he ever could have bought himself.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think she is the reason that he finished first in that race. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, that thing was just almost a dead-on tie, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Because I think whatever efforts go into Martin, they're going to help Powell. Now, whatever efforts go into Chambliss, I wonder how much they are going to help Bubba McDonald since some Republicans feel so strongly about him, because this is going to be the more informed voters that make up this turnout.
Guys, have y'all seen the U.S. Senate ads the last couple of days on TV?
They've started back up, and I know one actually features Barack Obama for Jim Martin.
I saw two brand new ads for Martin today, but Chambliss seems to be running a lot of the same ads that he ran in the general election, and I was just wondering why he hadn't come out with a bunch of new stuff. It certainly isn't that money is a problem. I was just wondering why.
Well, you know, I wonder if it could be that he's trying to get a new media company, because we talked about early on, now the ads did improve, but early on, Saxby Chambliss' production values were absolutely abysmal. You know, I mean, they had things like, you know, they showed the Georgia state flag with a Confederate battle flag on there when it was from his congressional race, because it's a congressman. It was just sloppy. And, you know, maybe he's having to redo some ads big time to get ready. Although I heard that Jim Martin's going to have $1 million in ads put into this thing. And that's not a group. That's just him. That's what I've heard the goal is. And that's a tremendous amount.
There's going to be a lot of fundraising locally for him, but then also the DSCC will come in, and you know everybody else will come in. So I think he'll.
It'll be well funded. It won't
yeah,
be.
It'll be
money
well
won't be the reason. And see, you know, and I talked about this the other night on the exit poll, that a lot of times when the Netroots, when they have to support, you know, 500 races around the country, they can't hone in on one and really do an incredible job, and you really can't, I guess, see the impact as much. But when the Netroots can focus on one or two races, it's incredible. I mean, Childers, Cashew, the Ned Lamont race where they took this guy who, I mean, probably wasn't even a very good candidate. They almost knocked off Joe Lieberman. I mean, all these different races and so many other places they've been successful. I'm probably forgetting so many. But they can hone in and do things, and they're going to be able to do this with the Martin race. And
yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. On Friday, I flew to Michigan, and I listened to XM radio on the plane, and I tuned into Air America and Randy Rhodes, who I never have a chance to listen to here in Atlanta, and she talked about Jim Martin for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
On Air America, talking about how great he was.
Yeah, so it really is going to be what we thought. This Georgia Senate race is going to be the center of the political universe, right?
Yep. My friends in Michigan were like, what's going on in Georgia? Who's this Jim Martin? Do we like him? I said, yeah, we like him, and you better send him some money.
Wow.
And if you don't like him, we know we don't like Saxby Chambliss. So
right.
Still send him some money.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell everything this week, but we actually have something planned big, big on the radio for that evening on Blog Talk Radio. But there's still plenty of time to give those details. And between now and then, of course, we may have somebody from the Martin campaign come on with us. Really going to be covering that race against Jim Powell. And once again, this Court of Appeals race, maybe we'll find out more between now and then, too, but lots of things. One southern state, one, I guess, true southern state that we think of as a southern state culturally and all, we didn't talk about was Virginia, and Virginia had a great night. This is a state that Carter didn't even win Virginia. The last Democrat to win Virginia was Lyndon Johnson in 64, and Barack Obama won Virginia. And Mark Warner just absolutely crushed Jim Gilmore. And you got to think, that's a pretty fair fight. Both former governors going up against each other, and it wasn't even close. I don't have that margin in front of me. Do one of y'all have that margin of Virginia?
I'm pulling it.
Well, I'm looking at the presidential race now, and Obama won Virginia by 200,000 votes.
And the Senate was...
Warner won it by 31 percentage points.
Yeah.
Try that one on for size.
I mean, it was almost like a guy that had been in office forever going up against, you know, the flunky the party could find. But
yeah,
it was an open seat. Actually, it was a Republican-held open seat, Democrat versus Republican governor, and it was still 31 points. Just incredible.
And Gilmore carried a grand total of 3 counties in the whole state.
Three
it's just
counties.
A wipeout. 3 counties
well, you know,
in the whole state.
Mark Warner is very much admired in Virginia, though. So, I mean,
oh,
it's
I know,
great.
But
I'm really glad that he prevailed. I think it's really good. It'll be really good to have him.
But there are a lot of times people are admired, and it's not that kind of beat down. And then the House races, there were some good House races there. I think there's still one. They're counting the votes, if you will. I'm trying to remember what is that. That may be a let. Well,
that would be Virginia 5, and it's a 646 vote.
Yep.
And the Democrat appears poised to grab that seat.
Perriello and Goode.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would be
Perry,
that'd be a win.
That would
some
be
other
a
close seat. There was another seat here that was pretty close.
Thelma Drake got beat. Yeah, she
Who?
Got beat there.
Yeah,
Thelma Drake got beat.
So that's already a take back for us. And so I'm trying to remember our guy that we had, Philip Forgett, which district that was. I want to say that was trying to think which one. Oh, that was Randy. He got defeated by Randy Forbes. So that wasn't one we made a lot of progress. But so many places we made progress there in Virginia, and that just may become Virginia and North Carolina may really lead, I guess, the next wave of Southern politics in becoming much more of a swing area where, you know, ideas matter, not heritage and race and everything else. Because I will say this, if you look at those Georgia maps, and I guess Alabama's the same way, still too many times in some places we're not holding elections, we're holding censuses, and it's sad that it's got to be that way. So I'm hoping places will begin, you know, like Virginia, North Carolina are doing, even South Carolina done to an extent, where people are going to vote on ideas. The one state I guess we hadn't talked about was Florida. And Florida is usually this exciting hotbed of contested politics. And this time they didn't have a Senate race or governor's race for starters, so that didn't change much. They did have a few House seats. And then on the presidential level, you know, we thought it was going to be close. It wasn't a blowout by any means, but Obama won, and we didn't have to have recounts or anything else for it to happen. And in the Senate, I'm sorry, in the House races, I'm trying to look right now myself. I guess Diaz was the closest Democrat to winning, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to look for his race. I know
Mahoney lost.
Well, he had his own personal problems.
Yeah.
I'm trying to I believe it was Joe Diaz that was supposed to be one to watch there in Florida. I'm looking for it now. I believe it's Garcia and he lost. Joe Garcia, the 25th district. He did lose, so I don't think we really picked up a lot of seats. Well, Tom Feeney, he lost in Florida 24. So, you know, we did but other races like Christine Jennings, which is that lady's been in targeted races, it seems like, for 10 years now. She actually did pretty poorly, 38,000. I guess she had kind of worn thin, if you will, on the voting public. So pretty interesting stuff there. Even though we're a Southern show, there's still two races to be decided that aren't, I mean, I guess in a way I consider the Georgia race decided in that we know it's going to be a runoff. And we're going to hold overtime, and they're already starting to work on that. But two races that haven't been truly decided, Alaska and Minnesota. Tim, what's the latest you have on those states?
Well, in Alaska, they've still got thousands of absentee ballots and stuff to count. And we've got Stevens ahead by a little over 3,000 votes there in Minnesota. We've got a difference of 221 votes, and when they certify those votes on the 18th, it'll automatically go to a recount. No provisional ballots in Minnesota to worry about or to help us out,
because they have
a deal where you can register on election day and vote that day. So that pretty much eliminates provisional ballots. There might be a little tweaking, a little changing. We've seen that happen this week as Coleman's lead has actually dropped by about 500 votes since there was, quote, 100% of the vote counted. So
yes, his lead's at 238, according to My Direct Democracy. And,
what do you guys think about the lower turnout in Alaska? Don't you think that's a little strange?
The lower turnout.
They had lower turnout in 2008 than they did in 2004.
With Palin on the ticket.
Yeah.
It is strange. I don't know. I have no idea what the weather was from place to place, I would assume, unless it's drastic. Those folks
are
traveling bad weather.
Because of Stevens and Young's ethical lapses, do you suppose some Republican voters stayed home to protest?
That's scary, because that means we would have lost by even, or it would have been a bigger divide. Although, if I had to pick, I mean, I was going to pose this question to y'all. Alaska, Minnesota, if we were going to, win one of these, by the time they count all the ballots, Catherine, which one do you think we're more likely to take with the counting the rest of the votes or recount?
Minnesota.
Or what have you? You think Minnesota. What do you think, Tim?
I think Alaska.
I think Alaska, too, because I think provisional votes and absentee votes shouldn't be counted. Because usually my experience is when you recount the same stack, the unless it is things like dimpled chads, the results really don't change much because –
I'm going to say something else, too, David. I would rather have Alaska because of Ted Stevens. It is a disgrace when a man that's convicted on 7 felonies wins a U.S. Senate race.
Yes, but I will tell you the fun of this thing, though, could be. Imagine, it would be great to win Minnesota. I think Al Franken would actually be good on the mic. He would actually turn up being a good face for us. Because even though some of the Republicans bring up his past career, I mean, my goodness, their idol was in monkey movies, so Ronald Reagan, so let's get over it. But anyway, the Alaska thing, if this ends up being Ted Stevens wins, he vacates his seat, the beautiful thing is Palin may run for that seat. And if all this stuff comes out that we've learned that the lady actually didn't charge $150,000, it was like more than $200,000 worth of clothes, and she flat out was practically stealing the clothes, and it was this huge fiasco, and they couldn't even tell McCain about it. They were so embarrassed. And then the fact that she didn't know Africa was a continent. She thought it was a country, and then she couldn't name the 3 nations of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Hint, hint, North American. I don't know if she included Greenland or, what's going on there, but my goodness. How many places are in North America? I mean, all this could be used against her, and wouldn't it be an embarrassment? And really, Alaska could finish her national political career if she tried to run for U.S. Senate and lost.
On the other hand, if she were to somehow run and win, and I have to look at her on C-SPAN 2 every time I turn around, I will cut my wrist with a chainsaw.
Tim, be honest. You're a man. You can always watch her and mute her.
If I have to listen to
if you have to listen to her on the radio and don't get to enjoy her upside, only get the downside. Now that is a real problem. I'll agree with you on that, Tim. Well, Tim,
I don't think you can necessarily say that she would lose that race.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit of a risk.
Right.
Yeah, but it would be fascinating politics to watch. Tim, go ahead with Outrage of the Week a little early so we have time to react and cover anything else in the time we got left.
Okay. It was, by any measurable standard, a pretty good week for Georgia Democrats. Basically, it's the first election cycle since probably 1998 in which we made any gains. Oh, they weren't great big gains by any stretch of the imagination, but gains they were. Let's list a few of them. We picked up 2 seats in the state legislature. It could have been better with some decent candidate recruitment, but we did pick up and not lose. Our presidential candidate finished only 5 points back in a state that Bush won by 16.6% just 4 years ago. Red Georgia was in play this year. Number 3, we forced Saxby Chambliss into a runoff. Now, who in their right mind would have bet on that just, say, a year ago? Number 4, not only did Jim Powell stay on the ballot, take that, Karen Handel, but he finished first and is also in a runoff himself. Number five, Representatives Barrow and Marshall, as we mentioned earlier, both won easily, and these guys were once targeted by National Republicans. So not too bad, right? Well, if any of you watched the Georgia game this morning and you didn't already know the election results, you would have thought it was a big GOP sweep in Georgia. And there was Dick Williams just yakking his head off. This guy has turned this show into his own little fiefdom, which he absolutely dominates with the help of his trusty sidekick there, Phil Kemp. And he was in rare form today. He actually said that the Republicans, and I quote, held their own in Georgia and then some. Okay, on what planet did that happen? Certainly not in this one. Also, if Alexis Scott hadn't been on the show, I'm not sure that Obama's victory would have even been mentioned. Williams was too busy talking about John McCain's easy win in Georgia to even bring it up. And when the other races that were on the ballot were brought up, all you heard from Williams is how the GOP is dominating this state, blah, 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 and not how the Democrats made gains here, which is what actually happened. Even the fact that Jim Powell made the runoff was barely mentioned, and Phil Kent did that, not Williams. Of course, Williams did mention his old buddy Saxby Chambliss, but Jim Martin got no credit for forcing old Saxby into a runoff. The credit for that was given by Kent and Williams to Alan Buckley, the Libertarian candidate, and to the conservative voters that they claim stayed at home instead of coming out to vote. According to Williams, you see, the Democrats didn't pick up any voters. The Republicans just didn't vote. But now my favorite moment came, at the end of the show when everyone on the cast chooses their winners and losers of the week in the closing segment. Every one of them naturally picked Barack Obama as the big winner of the week. I mean, who else could it be? Well, not so with Dick Williams. Hold on to your seat for this one. He actually picked President Bush's mangy little dog who bit some Reuters reporter on the hand. I kid you not. Now, I just have to wonder if this is a show now that Channel 5 would be happy with. I think back to when people like Bill Shipp used to be on this show. In those days, it really was a show about Georgia politics, but now it's a show about Georgia Republican politics starring Dick Williams and I guess Phil Kent as the Beaver or something. So if this week's episode is indicative of how blindly partisan this show has become, then I suspect that Dick Williams and his bow tie will not be appearing on my television at least much longer. Even in a week in which the Republicans were shown the door in this country by the voters, Dick Williams' arrogance was breathtaking. Oh, and it was also outrageous, David.
Well, Tim, thank you, and you're absolutely on the money. And that's really, that's one of the reasons the Cut Through Vine exists, is because we needed some way to counter all the, the talk shows on radio that control the airwaves, and then the Georgia gang, which typically TV is a little more balanced. But if that's our only show we can have, then we don't have it there. Catherine, what are you saying?
I'm sorry.
I thought you were.
It was me. I was saying it used to be a balanced show. It used to be a great show.
Yeah. And it's just.
It's just degenerated into, like I said, the Dick Williams show, and Dick Williams is,
and he knows what he wants. He basically wants to have, three white folks that show, they're all good Republicans, and then he has particularly Alexis Scott, the African-Americans, they're the Democrats, and see, that's exactly what we're thinking. No good white person would be a Democrat. That's the message he's trying to send. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't watch it every week, but that's always the feeling I get.
It's like, why can't? I mean, basically, if, you know, and even in the presidential race, if one out of every four, you know, white voters in Georgia votes for Democrats and you have five people, my math says, and of course in other races that, you know, white folks are even more likely to vote Democrat, my math says you need to have one white Democrat if you want to balance this thing out to really show Georgia. But then here's the thing. He's afraid that maybe people might see that and begin to think a little more and not just look at their skin color and how they vote.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you something, guys. For the next 3 or 4 weeks, that show is just going to be free advertisement for somebody like Saxby Chambliss. They're going to get on there for 30 minutes and sing his praises.
Oh, yeah.
And I dread it.
Well, that's why we can do what we do in good conscience. That's why, you know, hopefully we can just get the word out there so more folks can come here. One thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, and it's going to, I guess, happen on the 10th, as appalling as that is, that's tomorrow, in fact, they're going to vote for Speaker of the House, and the Republicans, who always love to talk about not disenfranchising military voters, which I agree is wrong if you're just flat out, you know, trying to disenfranchise military voters, it is the wrong thing to do, but they were actually going to hold the vote, and Glenn Richardson was going to say too bad to the fellow that's state rep up in Gainesville, one of his own Republicans, because this fellow was going to vote for David Ralston. I want to say the name wrong. Does anybody know the name of this Gainesville rep? I want to say Collins.
I don't know.
That sounds right.
Story, Tim.
Now I'm trying to get to it. Now I know it was on the AJC website they were talking
about. Well, because
it's
just absurd. You know, one, you should be having the election. See, I think what they're afraid of is a lot of Democrats will say, hey, they may swing some kind of deal, and a lot of Democrats vote for Ralston and then, of course, get some type of, you know, positions out of it, possibly vice chairs, what have you, on different committees. But then, you know, Richardson wants none of it because he wants to keep all the power.
So his name is Doug Collins. He's
Collins,
an Air Force chaplain.
Right.
He's in Iraq. Yeah.
And they're trying, and now they're saying that, oh yeah, I guess we'll let him vote by proxy. My goodness, how good of Glenn Richardson to let him vote by proxy. And it should be interesting, but I guess they want to have this thing so quick before he could line everybody up. Any predictions on how that's going to turn out, Catherine?
I don't have any.
Tim?
You know, I can only say the Republicans would do themselves a favor if they'd throw Richardson under the bus, but that's just me.
I think
they would
do themselves a favor, but I don't think they'll do it. I think if this thing were to happen in January, there would be a good chance of it happening, which still, I think the full House does have to vote on it in January, which, of course, if it's all Republicans voting one way, if Republicans move over and not vote for DuBose Porter, which, of course, I'd love, but I'm being a realist. But if they were to have some kind of, you know, power-sharing mechanism, I still think something could get done to remove Glenn Richardson.
Before we go, can I jump to another subject? Because this
sure.
is pretty important. Newt Gingrich has let it slip out through a friend of his that he would be open to taking over the Republican National Committee if they would be so inclined as to select him. And I was just wondering what you guys thought of that.
Well, it'll be interesting when that election comes up. I don't know when it comes up, but when it comes up to, you know, really discuss that, I guess also the Democratic Party will have their election then soon, too. And then, of course, that, you know, there's been rumors about the 50-state strategy. I heard one time they're just going to kill it, and then later I heard that it was going to be more of a fact of, you know, the people were going to be laid off anyway, and then they can be then reinstated all in January, which, of course, places like Louisiana and Georgia and, I guess, Alaska and Minnesota, they probably need to slow that up. Since those places, you definitely need all the staff you can get. Catherine, what have you heard about that?
Well, I haven't heard much about the 50-state strategy, but I think that there's going to be a bloodbath in the Republican Party, and it's just going to be basically like the Gingrich Republicans and the Palin Republicans. It'll be interesting to see who prevails.
Yes, because I guess, I mean, you know, they got into that the other night. Andrea Shea King and Kevin Ross, they were getting into it, and, you know, one person you could tell had no interest in, you know, worrying about diversity. They just wanted that, you know, hardcore, you know, the Republican principles. We're going to stick to our principles, right or wrong. And the other was saying, look, we need to grow this party by having some diversity, and that's the only way we're going to get anywhere, given the country itself is diversified. Obviously, if I was, you know, doing my best to actually advise them, I would definitely say that Kevin Ross was right about actually adding diversity. But then if they go hardcore in the other direction, I think Democrats will reap benefits. So I'm
David,
I
wanted
for them
to say
to fail.
I wanted to say something about that show the other night. You were great, and I didn't listen to the whole show, but I have to commend you for your conversation with that woman from California about the Proposition 8. I thought you spoke very eloquently about that, and I was very, very impressed, and I hope that people have a chance to hear what you said about it, because I thought it was very, very good.
Yes, and that's how I feel. I mean, you know, I'm a Bible-believing Christian that goes to church, but I just have no real use for hating on people the way, you know, in my opinion, God made them. That's just silly. You know, now,
of course,
other things like atheism and the folks attacking, you know, almost like hardcore, you know, the Darwin fish crowd that actually want to attack people, I'm not as into them. And then people might hear me and think I'm more conservative, but those are two different issues in my mind.
And congratulations on the success of that show, by the way, David.
Yeah.
Tens and thousands of listeners. I just hope that the Kudzu Vine reaps some benefits from hearing about it, because, you know, we run a pretty good show here if you want to hear about Southern politics. But